Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Super Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And like I just said, this is the Super Nintendo episode where we just talk about Super Nintendo games, kind of semi-chronologically. We are in, of course, April. So we would be looking at games from April of 1993, but there was nothing really noteworthy that came out in that month. So we're going to skip ahead to May, and then in May, when my brother is actually in town from, where does he live now, Belgium?
I think so.
Yeah, he lives somewhere
obscure
in Western Europe. We are going to be talking about a very special game to the both of us, which I don't want to spoil on the podcast, but I'll tell you off the air if you guys really want to know. Wes already knows. It is one of his favorite games.
Yeah, someone's my favorite, I mean, want to put a gun to my head and pull the trigger.
And actually, I'm excited about this particular episode because at the end of the show, we're going to talk about one of your other favorite games, which is a total
We don't
surprise
know what game you're talking about here, so this will be interesting.
It is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it. But before we actually get started with the games that came out in May that we're going to be talking about during this episode, there is a little bit of news that I wanted to discuss. Regarding the Super Nintendo, and that is that the original Shin Megami Tensei is now out on iOS, so you can download it on your iPad or iTouch. And this was an RPG originally developed and published by Atlus for the Super Nintendo back in October of 1992. And this is noteworthy because it's the first time that this game has ever received any sort of localization for any territory besides Japan. So this game was released on, of course, the Super Nintendo, and they also ported to like the PlayStation in Japan and the GBA in Japan and Android and iOS. But back in March, just about a month ago now, they did a full localization, translation, and all that stuff, and released it. And you can get it on iOS for $8. So this is a series that I've talked about a little bit, because earlier in 2013, Shin Megami Tensei 4 came out for the 3DS, and it was one of my favorite games of the year, but this version for the Super Nintendo, the series has retained a lot of the same elements, but has morphed a little bit over the years as well, so in the first one for the Super Nintendo, it is a first-person dungeon explorer game, similar to like the battles in Dragon Warrior or Dragon Quest, where everything's in first-person. You only see the enemies, you don't see your party, and moving around in your dungeons as well is also first-person, not unlike Atlus's other series, Etrian Odyssey. And it has a 6-member party system.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's impressive.
And yeah, I was really surprised to actually learn this, because yeah, that is a lot of party members. Just like other Shin Megami Tensei games, this one, you're able to collect demons in battle, not dissimilar from Pokemon, except, you know, instead of like injuring them and capturing them in a ball, you have to speak with them and kind of coerce them into joining your side, or just outright bribe them.
Hey, come on. You know you want to. Come on, you know you wanna. Come on, let's fight for me. Come on.
You want an adventure.
So, and one of the interesting things about this particular game is that not only do you have to coerce them or just outright pay them to get you to join your team, then you have to summon them into battle, similar to Final Fantasy, where they'll come in and they'll stay with your party for a little bit and fight for a short amount of time. But you have to pay them to do that as well. So not only do you have to pay
them... Is it
like
a Yojimbo or whatever?
I was just about to say, it's like Yojimbo.
You actually have to pay and make it.
Sure, not too dissimilar from that premise. So, and that has changed in the series. Like, Shin Megami Tensei 4, you had one member in your party, and the demons you recruit become your other party members, and you don't have to pay them to keep fighting for you once you convince them to join your side. They're with you until you decide to kill them or fuse them with other demons. And the demon fusion is in the original game as well. You can fuse two or three demons together to create even more powerful demons, which is something that's necessary in the Super Nintendo game, because demons don't level up. Only your party members will level up. So you have all these summoned demons who, the ones at the beginning of the game, will become useless to you fairly quickly. So just like in later versions of the game, or later sequels to the game, I should say, the stat distribution is manual, so you kind of customize your characters to whatever you want, and you equipable gun weapons and melee weapons, and you can raise their speed and all that good stuff. So I have not downloaded the iOS version, even though I really want to, because it wants me to upgrade my version of iTunes, but in order to upgrade my version of iTunes, I have to upgrade my OS on my Mac, and in order to upgrade my OS, I have to pay for it. I don't want to pay for it.
It's catch 22 right there.
Yeah, it really is. They've got me between a rock and a hard place here. But you know, I was planning on upgrading this computer anyway, beginning of next year, so I'll just hold off until then. So, mm-hmm. All
right.
Yeah. All right, so... Oh, and the one other thing I wanted to mention, I'm also kind of holding off because I got my fingers crossed that maybe they'll one day do a Wii U version. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, maybe. That'd be nice. I'd buy it if it worked.
Do you think they do both? Like, do you think them releasing it this way is like a sign that they're not going to do that?
Not necessarily, because Atlas does like to release a lot of things across a lot of platforms. Mm-hmm. So previously to this localized version... the Japan version, like I mentioned before, was on Super Nintendo and PlayStation and Android and iOS. And they do like to diversify their library as much as possible. So I wouldn't ever rule out them saying that they're bringing it to the Wii U or the 3DS. And it'd be really cool if they did. So if you're listening, Atlas, go ahead and do that. I'll buy it.
And Run Saber. Do that to Run Saber as well.
Sure.
While you're at it.
So... last month on the Super Nintendo show, I discussed Star Fox by myself for about a half hour. It was very lonely.
That's so sad. Yeah, I just got a cartridge of it, too.
Yeah? Did you guys have anything you want to say about Star Fox?
I've not played it. Okay. But it's in my possession.
Like, that's ever? You've never played Star Fox?
That's the thing. Like, I actually really have no exposure to it. I think I've maybe clocked 15, 20 minutes at friend's house 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
The only one I played was the... same thing. Yeah. Years and years ago, I played the Super Nintendo one, but mostly the N64, that was it.
Yeah, I don't have really anything invested in the property.
Which, if I remember it correctly, it's actually pretty similar, right?
To what?
Like the two versions, the N64 and the Super Nintendo.
It's kind of a retelling of the same story.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Except, you know, of course, the N64 version, upgraded graphics and... the
Slippy guy even more annoying.
Yeah, they gave Slippy a voice.
Is that the frog?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And also the there's branching paths. Like there's branching paths in both versions, but in the Nintendo 64 version, the path you take is kind of dependent on actions you perform in particular levels. So if you can discover a new route within a level rather than picking your path at the beginning of the game. So nothing else to add about Star Fox is all right.
Really? Yeah. Sorry that you were hoping to go to the well some more Star Fox talk. Sorry.
No.
Check back in a few months. Maybe I'll actually clock some time in it.
So aren't you glad we don't have like the doors up? You can just stand up and do whatever you feel like during the show.
I know this tiny chair was not nice for my tookish.
It seemed like a good idea at first, didn't it?
It did, and it was super soft at first, but then it went rogue and turned on me. Stop it, gate. All right.
The chair went rogue.
Our listeners don't even know what's going on at this point. Sure I'm switching don't. Chairs, people.
Yeah.
So if we want to peek behind the curtain a little bit, usually we have like these makeshift sound barriers, which don't do an incredible job, but they do all right.
And by sound barriers, we just mean doors with carpet stapled to them.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
It does the job.
Yeah, it does.
Well, it does like 90% of the job.
But today, we just felt lazy, so I didn't.
Well, once we start making all that money, we can get a real studio.
It's been 2 years, Ryan.
We're going to cash in really soon.
What are you talking about? It has been like 4 years.
Has it been 4 years?
It's been a lot, yeah.
Actually, it's been longer. It's been 4 years, Ryan.
We just crossed episode 42 of the Nintendo show, which we did monthly.
All right, fine. You caught me. I'm not good at math.
We've discussed that many times on the show. We'll be right back. So, if we want to dive into the actual topic, the three games that I have on tap here, well, 2.5. I'm not really going to talk too much about the third one. But we got Shadowrun, and we got Super Bomberman, and we got Super Turrican. So, I wanted to start off with Shadowrun, which came out, of course, in May of 1993, 21 years ago next month. So,
it's drinking age.
Yep, sure is. So, this game was developed by Beam Software, who was behind such video game masterpieces as Back to the Future for the NES.
Really?
What?
As well as the
Why sequels. Do I not own this?
I asked myself the same question when I read about this game, and I will tell you why you don't own it in a minute. And this game was published by Data East, who did a lot of publishing back then, not so much anymore.
I was also talking about the Back to the Future one.
Wow, well, you don't own that because it's a piece of shit. Shadowrun is a cyberpunk fantasy action RPG based on a tabletop RPG.
Awesome. You got me so far.
Yeah, all
you gotta do is reel it in.
That right there is what reeled me in too.
Steampunk? And tabletop?
All right. RPG?
Let me tell you guys about the $40 I will never get back. So, this game takes an isometric view to the gameplay, so it's basically a top-down game, but they kind of adjust the camera down a little bit to give the illusion that you're moving through a 3D environment, and it's also kind of at an angle, so it doesn't really mash up well with having to use the D-pad, which are just at like straight right angles, so you're doing a lot of like trying to manipulate the D-pad in order to move in the direction you want to move your little character.
Like kind of a weird angle looking down into it.
Right. Okay. So it doesn't really work that well with the D-pad, and also aside from the issues of just moving around in the environment, well, there is a cursor element to the game, so
it's great. It's a great thing to add to any Super Nintendo game. It's a cursor.
What does this RPG need? It needs point and click adventure elements to it. That's exactly what they should have done. That's a fantastic element to add in there. So. In order to interact with anything in the environment, you need to move a cursor over it to examine it. And a lot of times you're moving it like over a desk or a drawer or a door and going to the door and like saying, I want to open this door. And then it'll tell you this door is locked. So you just move the cursor over there and try to interact with it for nothing.
Can you like just drag the cursor across the screen randomly in the hopes that it triggers just like, is there lights? Do things like have outlines if it's something you're supposed to interact with?
No. You have to play guesswork with things that you can interact with or not. And it's all menu-based. So when you drag your cursor over like a desk and try to interact with it, if it can't be interacted with, it will still open up a menu. So then you have to exit out of the menu and then get back to the game.
Yeah.
It's not like a super invasive menu. It's just like a little window of a menu in one of the, like a corner. Like Dragon Warrior for the NES, if anyone remembers that game. It doesn't like alter your screen entirely into a menu. You can still see what's going on in the game. There are a lot of menus in order to manipulate, and most of the gameplay is exploration based. So you're this dude, and you wake up in like a
exactly what you want with the cursor.
Yeah,
exploration.
Yes. So your guy, you wake up in a morgue, and the people there are like, oh my god, he's not dead. And then you get up and you start walking around the world, and you have to try to figure out who this guy is and why people want him dead.
So he wakes up in the morgue. They go, oh crap, he's not dead, and just let him walk right out.
No, it was one.
You would think so. A few questions would pop up.
Like, maybe we should just kill him. This reflects poorly on us.
Dead people just stay dead.
Isn't that what medical examiners are trained to do? He's not dead. They have, like a baseball bat. And they just start beating the shit out of anyone who wakes up in a morgue.
They really dropped the ball on that.
So in order to learn things about the world that you're moving around in, you go around and you talk to people and you examine them like you examine objects. And you have to learn key phrases and then go around and ask other people about those key phrases. And key phrases will be like highlighted in red and they'll get added to a word bank within another menu. And you can ask other people in that through like dialogue trees.
Sounds streamlined.
It's amazing. It is. And so far, I put like half an hour into the game, and I was just walking around trying to find something to do, and I learned one word. I learned one word to ask other people about. And I asked everyone that I knew existed within the world. And everyone, like, either gave me, like he's giving you a blank stare. Or, like, you made him mad. Like, I'm just trying to play the game. Don't be mad at me.
So is there, like, an average play time in this game? Like,
I didn't look it up, but we could. Maybe when we take a break.
Four lifetimes.
There are people still playing it. So this game severely lacks direction. I had no idea what to do. I was going around within this world, which, you know, isn't bad looking. It's kind of like a drab, dystopian, futuristic kind of game. The color palette doesn't exactly match what you would think. They're like a lot of hallways and corridors with like beige walls and stuff.
This tree should not be orange.
Actually, I don't remember if there were any trees. So, and then moving around in the world, like, you're constantly getting shot at. There are, like, people, sometimes you can't even see them. Like, you just notice, like, you're taking damage. Like, okay, well, I guess someone's shooting at me.
Well, you were dead 10
minutes
ago.
I guess I should move away. One of the things, like, the main objective at the beginning of the game, like, as he walks out of the morgue, he's like, I should probably find a gun. Which is, I guess, what people do in the future. And you just have no idea where you're supposed to get a gun, how you're supposed to get a gun. There are doors that you try to examine and walk through. They're locked. Other doors you go through, and there are like five guys, and they all start shooting at you. You have no idea where to go, and it's not very good at leading you in the right direction or even giving you something to go on at the beginning of the game there. I was doing some research on the game, and it ended up, it shows up on a lot of people's, like, top 50 Super Nintendo games. And it was in Nintendo Power's, like, top 200 games on Nintendo systems of all time. And I don't know why. Like, I was thinking, like, that maybe there was
Was this, like, groundbreaking for its time? Maybe?
Possibly. Maybe that was it. But I was thinking, like, maybe there was some sort of misguided nostalgia about the game. Or maybe some sort of nostalgia about open world games, and I think that that's a bit misguided because these kind of open world games rarely work.
Well, didn't you say earlier you felt like this should be like a text adventure?
Right.
Or at least it's trying to emulate that sound.
Right,
style.
It plays like a text adventure because you just have to just start go and doing stuff and see if anything results from it. And a lot of times, no, it doesn't. Which, in a text adventure, you kind of skip out the bullshit, which is actually like moving around and having to watch the game. So you can just like try stuff at random very quickly. So it streamlines the, I guess, game, if you want to call it text adventure. Mm-hmm. I guess it is a game, it's not a video game. Anyway, there are reviews on it that I've looked up are surprisingly positive, like 4 out of 5s and 8 and 9 out of 10s. It's unbelievable. I find this game to be nearly unplayable. Yeah. The controls are poor. The exploration is bullshit. There's absolutely no direction in the game.
People randomly shooting at you.
People randomly shooting.
Of all of the things that you described that are annoying about this, it is the complete lack of like communication with the other NPCs in the game.
Right.
And then just also getting shot at all the time.
Right.
For no fucking reason.
It throws you into the world and say, okay, go into this world, explore, figure it out. By the way, everywhere you go, you're going to be shot. That's not a good game. That's bad design. So this game, I described it earlier as an RPG. There are leveling up aspects to it. The entire time I played, I gained 0 experience, so I have nothing to comment about the level up system.
Wow.
Right. If you're
not even like a congrats on finding the cursor, like 10 speed.
No, nothing like that. You opened your first menu. The only item I found in the game was like a medic kit or some sort of health restore item, and I found it in the morgue at the very beginning. It was like, hey, I found an item, making progress. The rest of like the half hour, 45 minutes that I played the game, nothing.
No.
Not a damn thing. So if you're curious about the game, I say try a ROM first, because it's not really a hard ROM to find. Not that any of them really are. I wish I had tried a ROM first, because
is it on the Wii Store? Is it on the Wii Store?
It is not. No. Okay. And the
why on earth would they put that on the Wii Store?
Well, the developer is defunct, and I don't even know if Data East is around anymore, so I don't know who's got the rights to this game.
Did you price cartridges online at all?
I did. I actually bought a cartridge.
Oh, yeah. So that's how you've been playing. Okay.
They sold me with Cyberpunk Fantasy Action RPG, mm-hmm. and Amazon or some guy on Amazon got my $40.
I see.
Lucky bastard.
Yep. He. I
could have sold used gum. That would have been more beneficial to you.
Doubtful. Doubtful. I had to think about it though. So
I was trying to be witty.
You did good. That's why I bring you on.
You're so clever.
So
should we, my element today, huh?
Should we move on to Super Turrican? Super Turrican came out also in May of 1993. This one was developed by Factor 5, who was largely responsible for the Star Wars Rogue Squadron games. There were three of them, one on the N64 and two on the GameCube. The GameCube ones were after the N64 ones, in case you were curious.
Thank you.
No problem. And this is a side-scrolling action game that we played a little bit of but before we started recording. Ryan, did you have any thoughts or opinions on Super Turrican?
It's well-trod territory, especially as big Contra fans as we are. We've seen games like this before.
The word derivative might be used.
Yeah. It's, for one, I feel like it's maybe the weirdest way to start it with it, but I feel like the colors are so jarring with some of the stuff. It doesn't make sense together and it doesn't look good. Like, nothing seems to fit in the environment.
It looks a little washed out.
Mm-hmm. But it does, it does the same thing that you've seen before, where you side-scroll, you have guns, you seem to have an energy bar, which does things like give you a Samus-style roll ability that you can roll around and jump with. So I think it's clearly been inspired by Metroid as well.
That has had no benefit to the
game
so
far.
Yeah,
no real use to it, at least that I
thought. Oh, there was the one part where I got a 1-up in like a little corner, because I was able to switch to the ball.
Yeah, kind of pedantic. It's Jejun. it's really, it doesn't seem to do that much special with the side-scrolling shooter.
And there are a lot of things in the game where...
Oh, by the way, is it single-player only?
Single-player only, yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, there are things in the game where you wonder, like, why is this even in here? Like the little morph ball. Like, it's only had the one benefit so far. Mm-hmm. And like the little lightning bolt attack. So you'd consider, like... I guess like a special move is one of the shoulder buttons. Also, it's double
your stationary
face button
too, right?
Yeah, and what it does is it turns enemies into stone, so it kind of halts them in their path, and then you can just shoot at them. When most enemies are dying before they're doing much damage to you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things about the game. It's not a super difficult game. The levels are just long and kind of semi
meandering,
directionless. Right, well, the direction is very minimal. That's another game we're going to be making that comment about.
Mm-hmm.
Because only like certain points will it tell you, hey, the exit is this way, and not really like in a
it's the tiniest attention grabbing exit sign too. Like,
right,
you could just as easily jump up the wall and go to the next platform and not even realize that there was a word there that said exit.
Yep.
That you were supposed to get out of the stage on.
Yeah, and it's a really forgettable game in a lot of ways. So, I guess I could say some positive things about the game. The controls work well.
Yeah.
The buttons are mapped intuitively.
Yeah. It's not terrible. It doesn't do anything terrible, really. If anything, it's like, it's all around a C-.
Sure.
I feel like. Yeah. It's not going to offend you with being bad. It's just not going to be fun.
There's some technical components to the game that are mildly impressive. There's they can have a lot of sprites on the screen without slowdown. There can be a lot going on, and the game runs along just fine. The sprite art is, you know, aside from the coloring, is decent enough.
Mm-hmm. But they seem to give you different gun types. They don't spell it out very well.
Sure,
exactly
yeah,
what you're supposed to do with these guns, or how you get the power ups, or how the power ups work.
Yeah, there's really indescript power ups of the game. So like, there's different orbs that you can collect. Primary color ones are red, yellow, blue. And they seem to alter the way your gun behaves.
It tells you power up. There's a voice that comes over. It doesn't say what it's doing, but it lets you know there's been a power up.
And there's also a shield that you can... Anyway, and you have like your bombs that you can drop.
It's unlike Contra in that, you know, Contra, you take one hit, you're dead.
Yeah.
Unless you have that shield, which is short term. But in that, there actually is like a health bar you have where I think you got like 10 notches. And the bosses seem to like take away half per hit. But then
right.
The little things will just, you know, nickel and dime you.
Yep. So this game is, you can get it for around $20 for a cartridge on Amazon, or you can get it for $8 on the Wii U Virtual Console, which I think would, not the Wii U, I'm sorry, just the Wii Virtual Console. It's not on the Wii U yet. It would be nice to have it on the Wii U because I think that save states would be really beneficial in this particular game, especially since when you die, it almost always respawns you in the exact same spot.
And it spawned, that was hilarious because when I was watching you play, it spawned you in the worst possible location, which is like right in the middle of three platforms while a whole horde of monsters are coming at you.
They're dropping bombs too.
Yeah.
And of course there's blowback damage. So
oh, and you don't take those in stride. You get them and then you fall off the stage.
Yep. Burn through four lives like that.
That was great.
So, that, you know, unless you're really into action scrolling shooter games, I'd say pass.
Yeah, it's not mandatory viewing for anybody.
So the last game that I had on tap was Super Bomberman. That one came out on May 10th, 1993.
Nice.
Developed by Hudson Soft, who
nice.
Also developed Bonk and Adventure Island. Do you have anything to say about Bomberman, Wes?
Oh, it's just Bomberman.
Yeah,
he doesn't have to go on. It's Bomberman.
I don't have anything to say about Bomberman.
Well, it's tough to talk about Bomberman because it's just pretty simplistic. You blow up boxes, you get the power ups, and then you kill people.
It's more of a puzzle game.
Yeah, because you're really just figuring out what's the best way to pin them in a corner and just wait for them to die.
So,
which is the biggest F you when you just turn a corner and then you turn around and you have bombs on both sides. There's nothing you do. You just sit there and wait for your inevitable death.
So my only experiment, goddammit, my only experience with the Bomberman series is at the dentist office, because I went to a dentist as a kid who like he had the Highlights magazines and all that
yep.
bullshit, but then also a Game Boy
yep.
with Bomberman and like Tetris.
I played nice. That same Bomberman, John.
Yes, you
we
did.
Had the same,
we
same
sure
dentist.
Did. We sure did.
Nice.
And yeah, just playing it with in the monochrome, the big brick Game Boy.
See, if they came out with a new Super Bomberman that was visually up to date, hell yeah, I'm gonna buy that thing.
They won't. Hudson's gone.
I know, but man, that'd be so cool. I just wanted
to. Could
Bomberman
they do a crossover
like
a Kirby versus Bomberman? I feel like
I don't see why not.
Yeah,
they
blow
did a
Kirby.
They did a Wario and Bomberman crossover back in the day.
Oh, for real?
I forget which system. I'll have to
yeah,
look that up.
Was a little weird,
but. Yeah, $35 on Amazon for a cartridge, and it's not available
damn.
On any virtual console. So yeah, that one, that was a little too steep, and I wasn't interested enough to try the ROM.
Yeah.
So. But the big moment's here, Wes. You ready?
Oh, God.
Brian has a game to talk about.
I do.
Brian has a game to talk about?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you had no notes and you were unprepared today.
We're going. Well, he was like, well, what do you want to talk about on the episode? Have you been playing? I'm like, I'm going to play a lot of Street Fighter, some F-Zero. There's one other game I've been playing, which is Harvest Moon.
Oh, God. Oh. This is a fun podcast, guys. I'll catch you next week.
It's happening. How can you leave? I have. Well, for starters, I want to know. He used the word hate. Do you really hate?
There is some legitimate vitriol here for some reason.
It's just say your piece. Let's just get this over with, like a Band-Aid.
Okay.
Pull it off. Be done with it.
All right. Well.
This game, hopefully, I don't have some kind of weird infection from it.
One of the most interesting things about this game, and since we're kind of doing things chronologically,
it's a farming simulator.
Well, also, this was a really late Super Nintendo game.
It was 97.
Yeah, it's almost a year after the Nintendo 64 came out.
It's kind of a, yeah, it's very late into it. And you can tell, actually, because it looks good. It actually looks really good. Because you have, the entire game is basically, like, brick-based. Because you are farming, essentially. That's how the game drops you in, is you're basically given this farm, and you're given an allotted amount of time in which to get the farm up and running and in shape. And at the same time, you're also supposed to find a wife and marry someone in the town. But you'll notice that about the way that the game is animated, too, is that, like, every brick is super detailed, even though it's got these small things and they all, like, are compartmentalized and fit together. Each one actually has incredible detail. Like,
What type of things can you farm? Do you, like, have to start with, like, a minimal amount and then expand?
Yeah, you start with buying seeds. You have actual tools that you use. You can only equip two tools at a time. The actual layout of it is you have the farm itself, you have the town, and then you have this forest area. And you kind of use the forest area to harvest resources, and you can, the game is got surprising depth. It's really deep.
Is that like your economy to the game, where you go into the forest and sell off what you find there?
Yeah, really, for example, you'll cut down trees or something and build fences with it. You'll buy seeds and start planting. You have a watering pail, and then you'll start watering them. And then the game, the actual game in order goes day by day. And there's a daytime and a nighttime. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to think of the math. The game ends in 2.5 years from the point in which you start it. But it's not like 365 days a year. It's 30 days per season. So it works out to about 300 days total to beat the game. And each day can go by in the course of minutes if you want.
So you're just like going for a high score here? What constitutes finishing the game?
Not at all. That's what's great about this game. You can play it any way you want to. If you want to be the, economic mastermind, you can do that. You can, when I was looking this up online, there are people that make spreadsheets just about how to maximize the value of the resources you get.
God damn.
How you can use them, how you can avoid bad weather. Bad weather happens. Did you ever play any of those lemonade stand games when you were a kid?
No.
Yep.
Where it was like, you get water, sugar, and lemons, and then you have to find the right balance, and then you're told a weather forecast, and then you try to make money. Like, yep. It's essentially doing that.
Highly addicting for some reason. I don't even know why.
Maybe you should try Harvest Moon.
No!
But yeah, and then you grow, like, cheap plants, and then you can also get chickens and cows, so you can start making milk.
Chicken and cow!
You have to fight off rabbits from getting your cabbages both at the same time. You get a dog, too. By the way, this is fucking adorable. If you hug your dog 100 times, you have to hug your dog 100 times in order to get the best possible ending. This is just a fun fact.
Are there other things that you can hug?
Like the dog gets killed by a freak wood chipping accident or something? I don't know.
I haven't tried. I'm actually really... the dog is the jewel of your farm. Like, I bring him with me and I take him places when I'm going to work on the farm or something. Like, I'll set him up over here so I can start doing stuff and see him just dicking around doing his thing. It's really funny. The only purpose of the dog is to alert you if your fences are falling down.
Oh.
That's the only thing the dog does. But aside from being fucking adorable.
Well, so wait a second. Can you hug other things or is it just the dog?
Hug your ladies. Cow doesn't give you more.
You can hug 5 different ladies if you want.
Oh, good. We're Muslim.
Well, that's the...
Dude.
Well, if you wanted to be, the utilitarian, maximize your income.
That's what I meant to say. I don't know why I came out as Muslim.
Because you're a fucking racist.
Let's go back to that, man. That was really... You're hurting some of our audience when you take shots at the Mormons. You're a big Mormon fan.
All right, so you're like the utilitarian.
You want to deal with the money of the game, you can do that. If you want to play the game such that you have the biggest farm in the world, and, you know, that's great. You can play that way, and you'll get a great ending. The ending will be really positive for you. It'll remind you of just how good you are at being a farmer. Or what you can also do is ditch the farm entirely. You don't have to do anything with the farm if you don't want to, and instead focus on getting the ladies. There are 5 different women in town, and they're all very different from one another. The ultimate end game is that you get them and then you have kids. Like, you actually, like, make babies with them. And The game will let you do that. And each one of them is different. They have their own personalities. They have their own jobs in the town. Like, one works at the flower shop. One works at the bar. So you kind of pick the woman you want. And they all have different traits, too. Like, for example, you have to keep them happy. So if they get unhappy, they will leave you or they'll lose affection towards you. So if you are the crazy economical farmer, and you're not at home in time, if you keep coming home when the sun goes down, or before the sun, or after the sun goes down, she will lose affection towards you, and eventually she will leave you. And you're kind of got to start over again.
Rats.
Yeah. There is also, if you chose to do so, some people like to play it living entirely in the forest. They don't even bother, like, with the farm or with the women. They just go into the forest where there's all this fun, different stuff you can do. It's a game that is can be surprisingly deep. All the characters in the town have rigid day-by-day schedules during the week. Like how I said earlier, it's not 365 days a week. It does adhere to Monday through Sunday days. So you'll have people that are like only going to be in town on Sunday. Or you'll have like this person's here 3 days and here 4 days and then back and forth. And you'll have different things you have to do with them. You know, there's big events that come up. And you can kind of see what all of the... And they all give you so much dialogue. It's surprising how deep the narrative trees are in interacting with some of the people in the game. I'm going to start wrapping this up. I think that's the best thing about this is, like, I've never played a game that is so open. I can do anything I want with it. And there's no real villain. Like, there's not, like, a bad guy in it. You're not trying to beat something or do anything.
Is it possible that you can lose?
There's different ways. I guess you can have kind of
all
losses.
The women leave you.
All of them.
Yeah, that's what will happen is, like, if you were to play through the 300 days of the game and it's 2.5 years later, what's going to happen is your parents are going to come home. They're going to see that you're pathetically single. The farm's fallen apart, and you haven't done shit to make money.
AKA me in 5 years.
Yep. They're going to be like, what have you done with your life?
Oh, no, I just picked a random number.
But even then, like, there's if you choose not to marry one of the women, and it's you will eventually, if you just, unless you completely ignore them, one of them is eventually going to fall for you.
One of them's going to settle.
One of them's going to, like, yeah. And you could, one of the easiest ways to do it is just go in and out of the building and talk to them over and over again. That's a good way to generate their affection towards you. It won't get you all the way to the top and won't get them ready to marry you, but it'll just be a nice way to pad the stat if that's what you're
slow
looking
build.
To do.
Yeah. Let them simmer for a while.
But I was going to think, I mean, there's
down their willpower.
There's a Casanova ending, which is kind of funny. If you choose not to marry any of them, but you have all of them it's in stars, 5-star affection, then at the end of the game, you will basically go from woman to woman and have like this crazy ending where it's clear that you're banging all of them. Like, they live in a town with 5 buildings. Like, they should be aware of what's going on. But then, yeah, like, there's... The game tailor-made endings for however you chose to play it. And then there's all sorts of... There's, like, a whole item system to it. And this is the one thing that I'm not deep enough into the game to really know about how to use. There's all sorts of just wacky items that seem to do really neat things. Like, one will just destroy the biggest bricks in one hit. Or, like, there's... What is it? It's called a snow gem, which are basically, like, these seeds that you can get that make really, really expensive vegetables. Stuff like that. But, yeah. Now that I'm bringing up vegetables, ultimately, that is what this game is. It's a farming simulator. You've got a huge tract of land, and you just grow shit. And you try and make money.
All right.
Now I can see why I missed out now growing up on a farm.
Yeah. And, that's me speaking. And I'm not saying this is the greatest game I've ever played. It's a really fun game. It's a novel idea, and I can see why there's 5 sequels to it.
All right.
Wes, you hate this game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you base that on nothing.
We all have our irrational hatreds, John.
I suppose.
Mine is I don't want to farm.
Okay. Okay.
I think that's a pretty good enough reason not to like this game.
Sure. If you say so.
You have like a hatred with my hatred with this game.
No, it's just a curiosity of your hatred.
Don't.
I mean, I'm not going to play it either, but I'm not like, oh my god, Harvest Moon, I wanted to die.
Wait, you're not going to play it?
Probably not.
Oh, fuck you.
You have five lives drawn.
All right, well.
And a dog.
The dog
keeps
is actually.
You keenly aware of the fence condition.
I mean, the hug button is actually pretty alluring.
Well, you pick it up. You pick up everything, but you pick it up in such a way that you're hugging it, uh-huh. And it's really, really cute.
Right.
And the dog has great animations, too. Like, you know, it just sit there and watch it do its thing. It's funny. It's like licking its balls and stuff. It's great.
All right. So I think on that note, let's close the show.
Licking his balls. I think that's a good closing.
So yeah.
No.
Next week is the official show, which that'll be fun.
Yeah. Time of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't wait.
I'm not sure about you anymore. You're a weird dude.
Well, you know.
And then after that, I'm excited about the Pokemon show because we're gonna get back to our Nuzlocke.
Yes.
We're gonna do gyms 3 and 4.
Yep.
So okay. Wes, you got a couple weeks to get up to gym 4.
Yep, to gym 4. Aye, El Capitan.
So did you catch that Slackoth?
Nope.
Why not? What happened?
I can't find him because he's a dick.
Okay. Well, I'll jump into my Sapphire version and see if I can just find one to trade you. Oh, Ryan, we had talked really briefly before about the idea of like maybe. Having trading Pokemon as...
I like that idea.
Okay.
Maybe not trading entire, like, teams around, but just, like, a couple of trades. Maybe okay. One or two.
Let's give you guys, like, a max cap.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would think, like, maybe since the three are going... Like, us three are going through different stories, we can each trade with each other once.
Yeah.
And I think that would be fair. So that way we wouldn't break the game by trading too much. But
so we get two trades apiece. Okay.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Math is fun.
Do you guys want some Geodudes?
Oh, I sure don't.
I got the hookup.
All right. Anyway. So until next week, everybody.
So long.
Later.